the underground bunker of the Civitas Studio in Raleigh, North Carolina, it's Civitalk with your hosts, Brooke Medina and Ray Nothstein. We're here to connect culture with civics, making it relevant to your daily life. And dare we say, existence at a time where too many are triggered and offended. So, relax. But buckle up and let's wade into the deep end. What's really happening in your old North State?
Welcome to another edition of Civitalk. Brooke is back. Today we're going to discuss our Civitas polls, and we're also going to look at charitable giving a little bit. And we're going to kick it off with probably the most important topic, but the best Christmas films of all time, not just this year. Brooke, how's it going?
Very good. I'm so glad to finally be back with you guys. I feel like I have missed out on...
Yeah, you've missed a lot.
On Civitalk. It's been sad. I've been traveling so much, but... glad to finally be back in the saddle and talking with you and having fun.
What are you most looking forward to this Christmas?
Ooh. Okay. The shallow side of me is most looking forward to wearing pajamas all day long over Christmas break and sitting on my couch.
That sounds really good.
The more sentimental side of me is looking forward to baking some Christmas cookies with my kids and decorating them and just family time. What about you?
Well, we're going to Chattanooga as a family, so I'm looking forward to that. There'll be a lot of fun stuff to do. I've been to Chattanooga before, but I hadn't really spent a lot of time there, so it'll be good. My wife just sent me a few days ago. She said, I know we're trying to save money for Christmas, so you don't have to get me a Christmas gift. But then she's like, if you change your mind, here's like an 8-page list. How do you interpret that?
I love that. I have so much more respect for Kelly than I even already had, which was a lot. So that's amazing.
Kelly, so as there's no, like, you know, as there's no doubts what I'm supposed to do with it, something like that, with that kind of information.
It means you need to buy at least 50% of what's on that list.
Whoa, I don't know about that.
So get to shopping as soon as we're done recording. Ray is going to go on Amazon and start ordering his wife.
I'm not a good shopper, though.
But she gave you a list.
I know. That's true. Good point. I mean, but still.
There's no
excuse. I still have to click the button.
I will look over your shoulder and we can do this together. Actually, James only gave me one item on his list.
Oh, really?
Yep. I mean, he's a techie.
Can you talk about it?
Yeah.
He's probably not listening.
Yes, I can.
He probably knows he's getting it anyways.
He already does. He's already given me the coupons for it. He just wants a new pair of AirPods. So pretty easy peasy.
So now the AirPods, I don't know much about AirPods, but do they have the ones... are the ones with the wires back in style now?
I don't think so. And I'm not sure the AirPods even have any wires. Or, well, okay. Not the kind I'm thinking of. But there are some that come with your iPhone that would have wires. But these actual AirPod Pros are different. And they're obviously wireless and amazing.
Okay. Because I thought I saw some like new AirPods that weren't wireless. But maybe I'm
I have no idea. Okay. I'm not on the up and up.
And people were like saying they were better than the wireless ones, but I had that hard time of believing that. But who knows?
Yeah.
I don't know. Some
Apple
techie
just always
out there
takes my money.
Is yelling at me and saying how stupid I am, which is true. If when it comes to tech stuff, I'm not in the
saddle. Have a podcast.
Yeah.
Who let us do that?
Yeah, that's a good point, Brooke. So if you are retired out there, if you have nothing to do with your life, you can come and you know about tech. You are invited as a volunteer, of course, because we don't know if we can get you any money. We might be able to get you a lunch or something. But if you want to come up here and volunteer and train us on technology stuff, then just reach out to us on email or however. Just call the office. We will listen to you if you are a sane and rational person.
And please bring cookies. But yeah. Okay, so Ray, also before we get into the meat, we have to talk about best Christmas films.
Yeah.
What's the top one?
Gosh, that's so hard because I'm probably a traditionalist in this sense. There's some great Christmas films out. There's some really bad Christmas films like Bad Santa, which I don't think I've ever seen. But there's some bad Christmas films out there. But I've always been partial, at least since I was probably 15 or 16, to It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, yes.
I'm a big Jimmy Stewart fan to begin with, and he has another great film that takes, these are probably several around Christmas, but one I'm really familiar with too is called The Shop Around the Corner. Did you know that what that was
not
remade?
Little Shop of Horrors.
No, The Shop Around the Corner. Do you know what a remake that, or do you know who the remake of that film is? It's actually...
No.
You've Got Mail is the remake.
Oh, okay.
But Shop Around the Corner was through actual snail mail. But it's a fascinating film, and I know it comes on if you have Turner Classic Movies or something, it comes on there every once in a while, but you can go out and probably find it elsewhere.
I could rent it at Blockbuster.
It's a really good film. I feel like it's not dated in some ways like some films are. I mean, it's just kind of a great romantic story. Mm-hmm. And Jimmy Stewart and Margaret Sullivan, they were very close off the screen too. I don't mean that necessarily in a romantic sense, but they were very good friends. And you kind of see a real kind of connection through that film between the two of them.
Real affection. Really.
Yeah, it's a really great film. In some ways, it may be a little bit better than It's a Wonderful Life. But It's a Wonderful Life is probably my favorite. I also like, if you're going the cartoon route, probably The Peanuts Christmas Story.
Yes, yes.
I mean, that's probably one of the greatest endings. And of course, Linus's speech really sums up the meaning of Christmas. You don't see that kind of, those kind of religious or faith overtones in society today anymore. Mm-mm. So it's kind of interesting to watch it because you would never find that probably on TV today, at least sort of in a mainstream outlet. And then Grinch. I was always like the Grinch. I always felt sorry for the dog Max.
Yes. Oh, he was so adorable. Yes. I did feel sorry for him too. But yes, the Grinch is a great one. I used to love that cartoon. We're talking about the cartoon, not the live action one that came out.
No, just the original. I think the cartoon was from the 60s at some time.
I think so. It was a long, long time ago. Well, I think you've got a great list right there and tend to agree with it. The only couple of films I would add to that are White Christmas. I love White Christmas.
I don't think I've ever seen that all the way through.
Oh my gosh. My sister and I, 1 year, we had a Christmas talent show.
Is it a musical?
Yes.
That's probably why I haven't seen it all the way through.
So there was we had a Christmas talent show as a family, and she and I had dresses that looked very similar to the Haynes sisters, who were these women that they were a singing traveling sister group. And they had these pretty blue fans and everything, and they sang the song called Sisters. And so my sister and I sang that for Christmas and dressed up like them, and it was so much fun. And so I really, really liked that one, as well as The Elf. You know, Buddy the Elf, what's your favorite color? Will Ferrell?
Yeah, I'm not a big Will Ferrell fan, but that's a funny movie.
Never mind. I take back all the nice things I said about your movie.
I'm just not a big fan of his. I think he's sort of like kind of juvenile humor. Sometimes it's good.
Exactly, yeah. Which is amazing.
I don't know. I mean, I think there's funnier people out there, I guess. I like the levity he brings. I think there's funnier people out there, I guess. But he's not, I don't know, he just...
Ray's being a Grinch. Wait, hold up.
Doesn't he kind of seem to play the same character in every movie?
He does.
It's kind of like Kevin Costner, who's not funny, but he's like the funny version of Kevin Costner because it's the same...
He exudes a similar vibe.
It's the same, like, all. Kind of like perpetually immature, which can be funny. I get it, but it sort of gets old a little bit after a while. I know I'm a Grinch. Yeah.
Yes, he's a Grinch. So it's time to move on to something else.
Hold up. There's other movies.
But Ray... Our audience wants to hear about the Civitas poll.
Okay, they're just craving to hear about the... You can't go on our website, nccivitas.org, and read them for yourself. But we will break them down. We will actually break them down in a fun and manageable way so you don't even have to do any work. You don't have to even turn your brain on.
We will provide expert analysis.
Right.
Me, the expert, Ray, the analysis. So. Yeah. No, but okay, you were going to say one more thing.
No, I was just saying, if you wanted to see a foreign Christmas film, Joyeux Noël is a French film. It's about the Christmas truth in World War I. It's actually a really great film, and there's some great music in it, too. If you're interested in a kind of film that maybe not be as famous and as French, but I think it's actually in English. Maybe some of it is in German and some of it is in French, but some of it's in English, too. So, and there are subtitles, but that is an actual good film to go see or
Ray
watch.
Ray is clearly the more cultured one out of the two of us. So go see that then go watch Trace like It Will, Down with
but
Buddy
you,
Deal.
But you like Will Ferrell. You're probably the more popular one. You
I'm
know?
More pop culture. You're more fine art.
Although I made a really good pop culture reference the other day.
Oh, did you?
Because I have to get an outpatient procedure done, and the person was talking about the medications. And I go, I just want the Michael Jackson juice. And she was like, yeah, that's propofol or something.
Okay, it's hilarious, though, that you're using Michael Jackson juice because Michael Jackson passed away, like, how many years ago? So your pop culture references are still old, Ray.
Yeah.
It's okay, though.
But I mean, she knew.
Yes, she knew. Good job. Yeah. Okay, let's go ahead and dig into these poll results. A few top lines. This is for our listeners, in case you have not yet seen this. Like Ray mentioned, it's at nccivitas.org under the polls tab. But this was a poll that we did specifically for Republican primary voters. So we polled 500 likely primary voters for the GOP primary. And so this really gives you an idea of where those on the right in our state are leaning when it comes to who they would like to vote for, both for Senate at the federal level and governor and lieutenant governor, as well as some other important questions. But Ray, let's kick it off by first, tell me what was most surprising to you in this poll.
I don't know if it was surprising, but it jumped out to me. There was nothing that like really shook me in the sense that I was surprised. I was a little surprised when we go down to the here to the end on the property rights. Let's see. Yeah, total favor, 57%. Total opposed, 15%. Strongly favor, 40-17. This was on, here's the question, I'll just read it. A state constitutional amendment to prohibit condemnation of private property except for a public use and to provide for the payment of just compensation with the right of trial by jury in all condemnation cases.
Can you break that down for us?
Yeah, so there's a famous Supreme Court case. I'm trying to think. Is it
Kelo?
Kelo versus New Haven. I can't remember the town. I can't remember the town in Connecticut, but it took place in Connecticut. New London, yes. I should know that because my grandfather was born there from that area. But anyways, there was a famous Supreme Court case that basically allowed for homes or property to be seized for not just public use, but private use by a corporation or a company. It was a 5-4 decision. It actually led, hasn't happened in North Carolina, but it led to a lot of state constitutional amendments banning the forfeiture or confiscating of private property with that was, you know, not for public use, may have been just for a private corporation or some other, you know, whether it be a strip mall or shopping mall, things like that. That should never happen, obviously.
Right.
Thomas was one of the dissenters in that case, Judge Clarence Thomas. He had a great line. He's basically saying, while citizens may be safe in their home, they're not safe from basically having their home seized from them. So
in that case, like you mentioned, that had to do with a company, a business coming in and taking
it was actually
the levers of law to.
I think it was Pfizer. I believe it was Pfizer because it had to do with Viagra. Producing Viagra there. Anyways, it kind of just a little bit. Even though 15% is not a lot. It is kind of a lot.
That 15% of those that are in likely Republican primary voters said they would vote against a constitutional amendment preventing eminent domain authority from being used for private sort of government or private corporation use. So that's very concerning that even that many.
Yeah, because property rights to me are just like kind of the linchpin of a free society, right? If you don't have property rights, then you don't have a free society. And so David Souter, he was the Republican appointee that actually went with the five in ruling against that decision. And of course, I believe that, and I could be wrong about this, but he fought, there was kind of some hypocrisy or something, because he fought against someone trying to seize some of his land in a different, I think was successful. So,
So this is something that very well could be on a ballot going forward. This is a way that North Carolinians are able to have a say in what amendments are placed in our state constitution, just like we did this past 2018, November of 2018, when it came to voter ID and income tax caps. But let's go ahead and also look at some of the national issues that are driving voters to the polls on the Republican side. And so we asked these 500, which of the following national issues is most important in determining your vote in 2020? And then we gave them a list of a number of options. But at the top of this list, at 30% were jobs in the economy. And right after that, at 19% was immigration. I think that's definitely, we see that on the news, a lot of news surrounding immigration issues, the border wall. That was one of the reasons that President Trump was elected. I feel like, especially in some other states that bordered our southern neighbor. But what are some of your thoughts on those being two primary issues?
It didn't surprise me at all. I mean, most voters, at least, I think there's a media narrative trying to turn people away from this, but traditionally most voters are pocketbook voters, right? I mean, they tend to vote if the economy is going well, especially if you're kind of a swing voter, not necessarily a primary voter where you're just going to be loyal to whoever your party nominee is in most instances, not always. But if, you know, you're a pocketbook voter, you tend to kind of go, well, hey, my 401k is doing well. My, you know, I'm making more money now than I've ever made. There's no recession. I'm going to vote for the party in power, the president that's in power. So, you know, that's probably a good sign, obviously, for Trump. It'd be interesting. I don't know what you think about this, Brooke. Do you think Democrats on that issue would be as high, jobs in the economy would be as high if you polled them?
Like Democratic primary voters?
Yeah.
That's a good question. I think the more ideological far left progressives would not. Right. I would say they would prioritize healthcare, gun policies, and energy and the environment. Whereas I would say maybe the more moderate Democrats would certainly say jobs and the economy.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I don't even know, because I don't know how many moderate Democrats are left. Maybe,
yeah.
You know, I think there are some in North Carolina, so let's not diminish it too much. But yeah, I mean, no way jobs in the economy, I'm not going to say no way, but I'd be a little doubtful that it would be number one if we were primarying. Mm-hmm. Because I think, you know, their issue would be more with the presidency, what's going on, like you said, on healthcare, what's going on with gun policy. So
right, and those are very important conversations to have, and especially given that our federal government has for many decades now inserted itself into healthcare, I think that it should be a pretty big priority for most of us, policy-wise. But that's really not something I would say is going to be as heavily impactful from the presidency as it is from congressional elections. And unfortunately, though, too many, I believe, forget that these policy questions really, they really are most feasible at being addressed in Congress. So we'll see what happens. But let's go ahead and look really quickly at the state level issues, because these are a little bit different, but not too different than the national issues that are driving voters. But again, jobs and the economy at 30% is something that's driving Republican primary voters to the polls. And then right after that is health care and the governorship. Or so the governorship and then health care, actually. Mm-hmm. Governorship was got 22% and then health care 17%. So give me some analysis on this. What you think?
Well, I mean, there's some angst with having Governor Cooper in there as the Democrat governor in North Carolina. I think there's a sense that most Republican voters view that he's too far to the left, even for a Democrat governor in North Carolina. He does a good job sometimes of straddling that and camouflaging that to some degree by speaking vague a lot of times in some policy areas. But he's too far to the left, even for North Carolina. And Republican voters, I think, realize that. You know, I'd be interesting to see, to kind of break down sort of the gun policies a little bit, whether that means, you know, some may be in favor of a little bit more, maybe some more stringent areas of background checks, or what does that mean? They want to see something like constitutional carry. Mm-hmm. So that would be interesting to break down to some degree. So, I mean, it's high, it's double digits. And, you know, I wouldn't expect that to be necessarily a double digit issue right there in a Republican primary, for a Republican primary voter. Certainly healthcare, I think, just because it's such a big expense, I think mm-hmm. people are looking for solutions. I mean, would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. I think that has been the top issue, policy issue at the General Assembly this past session. And it's one of the reasons that Governor Cooper purportedly vetoed the budgets. And so they want Medicaid expansion, most on the left do, and the right in many cases has fought that. There has been a version of Medicaid expansion proposed by some Republicans called Carolina Cares, and we've actually written extensively about this, specifically Leah Byers, who was the co-host last week with Ray, and she's got a lot of work on this. You've also written about it, as well as some others. But yeah, I think that these are issues that are certainly going to continue to receive a lot of visibility as we go into 2020. You may even see some commercials related to them. But let's get down to something I would say people have even more feelings and thoughts on, especially in our audience, I would imagine. And you have written about this, and it has to do with the unity in the Republican Party. And so what we asked was, do you think Republicans are more divided or more united than usual? Or is the level of unity about the same as previous elections? So 18% said that we were more divided, whereas 53% said more united, 23% about the same, and 7% not sure. But you wrote an interesting piece about this and related to President Trump, and is he a unifying force in the Republican Party in our state? So why don't you share a little bit about that?
I think Trump is, and I don't think it's just because of Trump's rhetoric or Trump's nature. I don't think that's unifying per se. It's certainly not unifying to certain swing voters or certain people. Obviously, almost everybody on the left, they get angry about Trump about that, and you know that's understandable to some degree. But I think what Trump is doing is, this has kind of been my sense, you know, there's things I don't like about Trump. There's things I really like about Trump, but there's something about Trump that is different than a lot of past nominees. Certainly somebody like Romney is Trump's willing to defend Republican voters, conservative voters out there. He's willing to defend an element of this population who've kind of been spit upon, stamped upon, you know, stomped over is the word I'm looking for. He's fought back and take a lot of the brunt for a lot of people out there who were marginalized in society. And, you know, sometimes we always think about, you know, we tend to look at people are marginalized by race or people are marginalized by ethnicity or wealth or this or that. But Trump has kind of fought back against for a lot of people who just, you know, I think obviously people out there know what I'm talking about, but the whole deplorable factor that was used by Hillary Clinton and that statement. And, you know, in a sense, Trump has kind of just been that brunt for a lot of people. He's taken a lot of shots for them, and he's out there defending them. And he kind of made a I don't really watch much of his rallies, but I turned into a little bit of that Hershey, Pennsylvania rally they had the other night because I hadn't seen him on the campaign stump in a long time. But he made an interesting point talking about the elite. You know, the elite say this. The elite say this about me. The elite say this about you. He said he turned it on its head and said, look, those people aren't the elite. You know, they're shady. They're the deep state, this or that. He said, you out there that are working 9 to 5, that are working weekends, that are the coal workers, that are the backbone of this country, he said, you are the elite of this country. And he basically said, don't ever forget that. And, you know, there was this palpable sense that Trump represents the forgotten man. Even if a lot of his policies are wrong, I think some of his rhetoric is correct. I'm not talking about the tweets where he's shaming people or this or that, but I think when he kind of taps a certain level of championing people who've kind of been forgotten in this country and elevating them and lifting them up, and there's value to that, and I see Trump doing that for some of his faults. When he does that to me, you know, he kind of just goes for the underdog. And to me, there's value in that. And I could go on and on about this while he's uniting certain parts of the party. Partly impeachment plays into that as well, because, you know, people look at the Democrats who went and came into office in Congress saying they were going to impeach the president. And now what's happening is, you know, they're actually impeaching the president. Well, it's hard to go into election basically saying you're going to impeach the president and then actually go do it. So I think probably a lot of people look at this impeachment as a partisan rally for the Democrats, and that's uniting the right. It's certainly uniting the Trump in terms of fundraising the Republican Party. They're raising massive amounts of money off of this.
Yeah. So definitely the impeachment is obviously very political and politically expedient for some and then not so much for others, but honestly I think both sides are fundraising heavily off of it.
Yeah, no, the Democrats are too, but however, not to the degree Republicans are,
right? And Trump during his inauguration speech, I mean, really that's what you repeatedly heard, was that forgotten man phrase. And so I think he did rhetorically tap into that. What bothers me though, and I might get some pushback on this, and that's fine, but some of his trade policies, though, I think are harming that forgotten man. And so he has rhetorically tapped into this, and I think done an effective job in sort of uniting it. He's taken a populist sort of stance, as has Elizabeth Warren on the other side, and united those that feel like they are the underdog. But I think that on the policy front, this is where we, like a think tank, like Civitas, a public policy organization, have to call to account the ways in which certain policies are actually creating greater struggles or have the potential to. And so I think that this is something that Republican voters have to square is, you know, the intentions might be good, but are the policies actually going to produce the outcomes that we're hoping and lead to greater American flourishing?
Yeah, it's hard to say because there's certainly some people in sort of middle America are suffering. But, you know, the stock market continues to hit all-time highs. I mean, you know, it's happened like four or five times in the last 3 or 4 months, I think, maybe a little bit more. So, you know, Trump feels that maybe he's in a position of strength where he can renegotiate some of these trade deals because the economy keeps humming around. But there's no doubt, I mean, I agree with you, that it's hurting certain farm industries. It's hurting certain exporters in rural areas and agricultural sectors, which were heavily supportive of the president. So it'll be interesting to see. I don't suspect that he'll lose their support come 2020, but there's no doubt that some of them have been hurt by his policies to some degree, at least.
I don't think the alternative is better, though, and so that's why I tend to agree with you that I don't necessarily think the support will be lost, because on the other side, if you've got a Warren or even a Biden who is extremely interventionist, too, and was pro-tariffs until...
Oh, sure.
You know, it's interesting.
It's interesting because, you know, at least in the traditional, Republicans used to be pro-tariffs in the 19th century, and you know, Democrats were much more pro-tariff in the 20th century and then parts of the 21st century. So it is interesting to see some of that flip. And you see that at the grassroots level too, where, you know, free trade was much more of a Republican or conservative issue, and now it's flipped to some degree, at least in some pockets of the country.
Yeah, certainly. So you know, these are just some things that, as with all of voting, but especially when it comes to some of these nuanced policy issues, it requires a lot of digging and consideration. And something that's always helped me personally, and I don't know, maybe it will help someone else out there too, but is just returning to first principles. Like, what are some of the core non-negotiables that I, as a citizen, as a just human being living here in the United States, the just greatest nation ever, what are some of the core principles that I want to always uphold even in my votes? And obviously, you know, I would say the right to life is a non-negotiable, as is private property. We discussed that, and liberty, individual liberty, liberty so that we can choose the good, though, not so that we can be libertine.
Right.
And so I think these are some important things that we have to consider. And so anyways, there is an excellent piece, though, on this. Ray offers some more analysis at our homepage. And what's the title of that article, Ray? Do you recall?
Is Donald Trump Unifying North Carolina Republicans, or something similar to that?
Yep. And that will actually go out in our newsletter as well. And so if you're not signed up for our newsletter or our newspaper, which Ray is the editor of the newspaper, you can go to our homepage and you can sign up for our newspaper and newsletter. And that would be great. You would receive communications from both of us each week.
Yeah. NCCivitas.org to sign up. It's right on the front page. And also, before we head out, I would like to promote CLC because I talked to Carrie a couple days ago and she still had, I think.
She's our operations manager.
Yeah, Carrie's great. She does a lot of hard work and she helps the trains run on time here at Civitas. So she probably doesn't listen because she's too cool for Civitalk, but if she does.
All the cool kids listen to
Civitalk.
That's
true. All the cool kids do actually listen to Civitalk. I get a lot of feedback on Civitalk recently. And so,
from the cool kids.
Yeah, the cool kids. So they're either really nerdy or really cool. So
which
we
is
appreciate
the cool kids.
Yeah, we
nerds
appreciate
cool.
both of you actually.
Ray and I are both nerds. There's no
yeah,
lie
there's
in
no
it.
Doubt. I'm definitely nerdy because I finished 3 books in the last week and a half.
Oh, you were such a show off. Stop showing off.
Some of these were like,
I feel
no,
bad about my reading life.
One of these books was like true crime kind of book. So it's not like I was getting smarter. It was about a Texas murder conspiracy or something.
Well, I'm reading The History of the Conservative Intellectual Movement by George Nash.
That's a big book.
It's big.
CLC. So we still have a few early bird tickets left. They're $75 off. So you can join Brooke, Donald, and I, and all of us at the Civitalk team for CLC. We're going to have some great speakers. So call Carrie or get on our website and get your early bird tickets because you can save $75. That's a big chunk of change.
Yes, it is. It's going to be a great conference, and you can actually go to civitasclc.com as well, or .org, and so you can get those tickets. But thank you guys for joining us this week, and we just always appreciate and welcome your listenership and your feedback, and look forward to talking to you next week.
Yeah, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.